I am Ricardo Romo, San Antonio, Texas. See, that summer in July, I broke the 4 minute mile, the first Texan to run the mile under 4 minutes, and it was in the summer of July, and I was there, and then in August, shortly after that event, I went up to Berkeley and ran in a international meet, the All American meet, and there, Jim Ryan, who was trying to break the world record, actually broke the world record, and I was one of his rabbits, but I did finish third in the race. So I was having, you know, there's quite a bit of running that summer, and that's why I was at the beach, because I like to run on the. I had a night job, and I'd go to the beach early and run up and down the beach, and then take a nap and sunbathe, and then go to work. It was pretty good life. I was lying on the beach, probably listening to the Rolling Stones, probably listening to some of my favorite songs, including Can't Get No Satisfaction. Lying on the beach, relaxing after a bit of a run. There were some friends, including several from UCLA, and they're the ones that sort of told me, hey, just announced on the radio right in that news flash. So this is now 10 o'clock in the morning for us. This is because by noontime, Texas, they were sort of, the word was going out all over. Lo and behold, the shocking news came across the radio waves. And my first thought was my family. And the first thought was the fact that I had friends, numerous friends, in school that summer, and sort of thinking about them and hoping that they were safe. One of my other friends was, they locked down the library, so they couldn't leave from the library for hours. So it was, there was a lot of confusion. There was from everything that I heard later, it was quite chaotic. I mean, no one could have known that it was only one person, as an example, because there was a lot of shooting going on. It is definitively a moment that I'll never forget. I was at Will Rogers Beach, Santa Monica, California, and a person next to me, a good friend that lived in the same apartment complex, a UCLA senior, turned to me and he said, oh my gosh, there's been a shooting at the University of Texas at Austin. That's where you go to school. I said, yes. He said, there's quite a few people killed. And my first thought was my brother was in summer school. So I said, I'll be back in a minute. And I ran to a payphone, and called my brother. My first concern was, you know, I'm hoping my family is okay, and I'm hoping my brother is okay. I would not know for hours anything because I couldn't reach him. And, of course, I was at a payphone, and this is before cell phones, so it was not going to be very easy that day. And it was a lot of worry for me that day. I talked to my brother. Eventually that afternoon, I reached him, and he gave me a few details. And the most important thing he said was, I'm safe, but I'm lucky. I was in the engineering building, and I had to go to work. And I was determined to get out of the building. And even though people didn't tell us what was going on, they just said, we're going to lock down the building. We're going to lock all the doors. I said, but, you know, I snuck out the back door. I snuck out the back door, got to my car, and it was within range of what he been shooting the other side. But I think he was focused more on the drag, where numerous, almost most of his people were in the mall. They were shot in the mall, some in the drag. He realized that he was definitively within the range of 1,500 yards. And my brother was had a lot of courses in mechanical engineering. He says, I knew Charles Whitman, and so I didn't know him well, but I knew him. He hung around with one of my friends. He says, one time in the library, Charles Whitman dropped his briefcase, and good God almighty, he must have had 20 bottles of pills. Of course, you know, no one knew what that was all about. But the buzz was, you know, that he was sort of this angry person. And then he was high on some kind of drugs, you know, and sort of confirmed by my brother saying, you know, this guy was popping pills all the time. The individual who helped immensely alert the police was a professor in the history department. And I don't recall his name, but I remember I was taking history in Garrison Hall, and there were some individuals shot right near the flagpole, right near Garrison Hall, within about 50 yards. If you walked out Garrison Hall, you'd walk right into the mall, and people probably leaving that building might have been shot. And it was within 10 minutes of the shooting that one of the history professors heard about it, heard the shots, and knew that people had been lying on the ground injured, and he called the police. The police came fairly quick, and if not for that, you can imagine what Charles Whitman would have done, because he was an incredible sharpshooter. Well, I think certainly one of my feelings, and it was sort of a strange and maybe a selfish feeling of, in a way, how lucky I was not to have been there for summer school, because I'd been there the previous summer a little bit. And I sort of thought how lucky I was, and then I was sort of sad, because I was lucky, but other people were not so lucky, and they had family, and they had children. I think at least two of the women who were hit were pregnant. And how it was just very difficult to comprehend that kind of madness, that kind of devious, diabolic deeds. So it was all, you know, just hadn't occurred to me that anybody who was educated or going to college could be so evil. And I think it's one of those things that it was sort of a bit shocking, because you know, everybody I'd met in college seemed to be a good, rational, well-intentional person with a mission and thoughts of careers and a life. This was definitively a mission of destruction, but also suicide mission to an extent. And it just baffled me how, you know, that these individuals were actually, you know, they were in our midst. And it was sort of, maybe I was naive in thinking that only I was surrounded by only good people. But now I realize that I was in the real world. And the real world was there are good people inside and outside. And that's that may have changed for me. It was no longer. That's why I say sort of lost our innocence. I do recall all the chatter and concerns. And it's one of those moments of great sadness for our community. I lived in Morehill Hall for 4 years. I was right on campus for 4 years. And I think it was a moment in which sort of our innocence was lost. It was a moment where, up until that point, universities were safe havens. No one ever got, you never heard of an incident of this nature at a university. You heard of cases of violence or assaults and things. But nothing to the extent that randomly people were killed. And it sort of, people who just happened to be walking across the mall were hit. So it was a day of, for everybody in Austin, a great day of sadness. But even for those of us away across the country, the thought that you couldn't be safe at a university, which was viewed as a haven for for tranquility and intellectual thought and peaceful contemplation was just a shock. You know, in sort of a sense is that we had lost our innocence and that no longer would we be ever so innocent, so free, and maybe so naive. So it was a real adjustment for our university as students and people who lived there. But I think across America, too, is that if this happened in Austin, it could happen here. It could happen in any large college. And then they thought, well, it could happen in any college. You know, people could randomly just go and hurt other people. And, of course, it would happen later. But this was the first massacre, mass killing of its kind in American history. I don't think we realized at the time that it would be that it had made international news, and that every single newspaper, every campus was now having conversations. And I know just from things that happen today in our campus at UTSA, we get into a conversation about, well, how are we going to handle this now that this happened somewhere else? It must have been a conversation all across America at every university. Is there anything that we have to be thinking about and doing to prevent and avoid something like this horrible thing to happen here? Is there something that we're not doing? Maybe counseling, or maybe we don't have enough police on the campus. And do we have enough police on the campus? Do we have any spots here where people could, you know, any high locations, and anything here that's not secure, anything here? Do we have enough, you know, and just later on you start thinking about, do we have enough cameras? I looking back on it and how I felt about it, the first reaction really from the people that I was with, I came back and said, I'm going to try them later. And it was sort of, what is it with you Texans? Remember, it had only been 3 years since Kennedy had been assassinated in Dallas. And now, you know, the assassination, of course, was earth-shaking. I mean, it just made international news and everything else. And now there was a shooting, which no one knew the extent of, which sort of confirmed to people that, you know, Texas is either the wild, wild west or attracts a lot of, you know, crazy people. But I will say that when I was in California going to school and I ultimately got my PhD at UCLA, people would ask me where I went to school, and I would tell them. And very often it came up when I'd say University of Texas at Austin. And sometimes it would come up very simply, like, oh, is that the school and that guy just got up in the tower and shot all those people, 14 people killed. And sadly, yes, remember, yes. When I came back in the fall of 66 and spent a year in Austin, I didn't look up at the tower for a long time. And I didn't look up at the tower for a long time because it was a reminder of a great tragedy. It was a lot of sadness and grief there. It was also a time of shame. We didn't know everything about who had done this, but it was sort of... isn't it shameful that someone from our own community, from our own university, from our own state, could do this, could hurt people? It really was painful to see and to be around that area where things had happened. And of course, yeah, it was in the middle of campus, and everybody had to be in the middle of campus all the time. No avoiding it. So we really kind of, all of us, were back to the crime scene, all of us thinking, how could this have happened? How could this happen right here in our very safe haven a place we've always considered to be an oasis for intellectual thought and rational activity. How could this have happened here? And it took a long time for us to realize that this is part of real life. You know, and good people, bad people can be in any kind of setting, whether it's a campus setting or a military setting or anywhere else. And it took us a while to kind of realize that, understand that. I had the pleasure of knowing Dr. Arisco, and he was truly a real brilliant man, and brought some additional kinds of services to the students and campuses that many others were not able to recognize such needs. But no, the 24/7 thing that the campuses have now are as a consequence of this early modeling that was done by schools like UT Austin. But I'm not sure how long we have had 24/7 here, but I certainly, when a big school like Austin proposes something and installs something, it really sort of helps shine light on the problem, and at the same time give us thoughts about solutions. So yeah, Dr. Ira was quite a force, quite a very persuasive person, very 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 persuasive. 1992, I became vice provost, and I ended up in an office on the second floor. And between 92 and almost 2000, when I was there, lots of conversations came up about whether or not we should open up the tower. And could we ever open up the tower? So I was there for those conversations. I think it had to take a generation. So it's 66 to 96. A little after, it was Faulkner, Dr. Faulkner came in 98, I think. I think it had to be a period of processing, it had to be a period of a generation later in which there was less discussion and less grief, sorrow. And secondly, Dr. Faulkner had attended UT. He was a graduate of the university. So he was more connected, and previous presidents were not necessarily Texans, and may not have been connected to the university as he was, but also it was sort of time. It was time to move on. It just probably, you know, there are many different areas of memorials. You don't close down Pearl Harbor because of some horrible event there. You open it up, you have a memorial or recognition, but you sort of move on. And I was pleased that we were kind of moving on, and at the same time, I remember that there had been, when I was there, there was at least one suicide a year from the tower. And it was, it was a kind of a joke among some of the people in the dorms. They might say, if I fail this course and you see me headed for the tower, stop me. Or they would make some references to going to the tower and jumping off the tower. It was a lot of references to jumping off the tower if we lost a football game or something. Back then it was one of those sad jokes, but it did certainly, many people acknowledge that every year somebody jumped from the tower. I think it's it was hard the first 30 years. The first generation was hard. People didn't really want to talk about it. Didn't want to. It's sort of many people feel like it. You know, by doing this in recognition is we're telling the world what horrible things happened here, and say, well, horrible things did happen, and we hope that by telling the world, We do two things. One is we let the families know that their loss is a loss for all of us. But secondly, maybe people will think, and maybe it'll lead us to some better kinds of policies, some better kinds of actions, and some things that might could prevent something in the future. And if one of those things is a counselor and mental health program that talks somebody out of doing something irrational or can identify someone as having serious mental problems and direct them to more attention, more medical attention, and maybe perhaps keep that individual from going out and buying a bunch of guns and shooting people. That certainly is something that we should recognize that that's one of the consequences and benefits of having the memorials. You know, it's kind of interesting when they had the murder of the young girl a little over a month ago. One of the thoughts was, this is the first homicide since Whitman. And I thought, my gosh, you know, of course, it all brought it all back to us again. But in a way, I was amazed that nothing, and glad that nothing had happened on the campuses since Whitman, but then sad for the family of that young lady, young girl. Well, I think open carry is going to be a real problem for campuses. It's already proven a long, long time ago to be a problem for military bases, where you are not allowed to have a weapon. So you can't take a weapon into the barracks. You can't take a weapon into the. You can't have a weapon on the base at all. And so they figured that a long time ago, that the young people can get into problems with weapons. And sometimes they don't have all their senses. They had too much alcohol, too much passion, too much anger. So it's better if they fight it out with their fists rather than with guns. But there was a killing here about a month ago of a commander at Lackland Air Force Base by a former special forces, very, very seasoned soldier who came back and was disappointed that he didn't get into a special forces program with the Air Force. So he brought two guns to the base. He snuck the two guns into the base and killed his commander. That was 1 month ago. So I think people worry that, you know, that commander made a decision. This person felt that the decision was made to terminate him from the program and kick him out of the program. And their whole lives, you know, they are before them. And so the concern certainly from the side of the faculty is, you know, we have to make some tough decisions, and some of those tough decisions will impact people's lives and careers, and some of them are going to take it very, you know, quite personally, quite emotionally. And, you know, do we really want those individuals to have guns? And it's a good question.